Welcome to another episode of Big Fish Radio. This is Captain Barry with you. We've got a special guest. I'm going to introduce you to him right away. It's Mr. Josh Olive. Mr. Captain Josh Olive. And Josh, you also have another show of your own, right?
Yeah, I got a whole mess of shows going on right now. You know, we've got several different shows that we're recording that are going out on KDW. Plus, we do a weekly show on Kix 92.9 on Saturday mornings. So, I talk a lot.
Right. So, this is your time and your plug. So, what are the names of them so people can hear you?
So, the show on Kix Country 92.9 FM, Saturday mornings at 7, is called Radio Waterline. If you don't get 92.9 or you don't get up that early, go to radiowaterline.com and you can listen to it there. We've also got, of course, Robert Lukowitz, who is sitting here across from me at this table right now, even though he didn't say his name yet, on that show with me. So, and then Robert does a show with me on KDW called Wild Things. I have no idea when it's airing. I do a show with my aunt called Southern Fried Living. I don't know when that airs either, but, you know, they're out there.
All right, thank you.
You also have another name.
I do?
The Fish Coach.
Oh, right. I almost forgot.
A man of 27 different hats.
This is the longest introduction we've ever had for anybody on this
Without
show.
Even mentioning that I publish Waterline Weekly Magazine also.
What?
All right. Well, we're out of the 25 minutes, so we'll catch you on the next episode of Big Fish Radio. No, that's great. And actually, there's a Waterline app you can download and like read the articles as well. You don't have to be located in...
Back issues.
Right. You don't have to be located here
and
in Portugal.
Current.
What?
Back issues and current.
Yes, not just the one that's of this month.
So in other words, I stay busy.
Very busy.
Yeah, you do.
Thank you for...
And you work at Fish and Frank's.
And you're on this show?
Yeah. What's going on here?
Do you sleep?
No, he doesn't.
I slept once. It was very boring.
Oh, man. Well, you indirectly introduced Robert here, and so our last guest is...
Alexandra Bernard. Alexandra B. Fishin.
B. Fishin. So the topic for today is big sheep's head.
Now, define big. How big are we talking about? What's a big
sheep's
head?
The biggest one you could potentially catch.
Right.
So like a 16-pound sheep's head?
Not necessarily the world record, but as big as you could possibly try to target intentionally.
I believe, you can tell me your opinion, Josh. A big sheep's head, kind of like a snook when, you know, you get 40 inches or bigger. To me, a sheep's head is big. It's qualified as big once it reaches 8 pounds or bigger.
I would say 20 inches or bigger.
Oh, you're going by inches?
For most people, yeah. Because, you know, it's easier to measure them in inches than it is to measure them in pounds.
Yeah,
so.
Okay. No, that's true. I'll give you that. Because the biggest one I've seen in person I caught was... It was 8.25 pounds, and it was 22 inches. So
yeah.
I think that's about the same, you know, very comparable.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that sheep's head, like most other fish, the weight is going to vary depending on what kind of season we're in. If we're talking about a female full of eggs, of course she's going to weigh more.
Yeah.
But is she really any bigger when she's full of eggs or not?
Yes. Very valid point. Robert, what's going to be the best time of year to go after these sheep's head on our coast here in Southwest Florida?
To be honest with you, I mean, I'm going to say, depending on how our winter starts out, usually around that first or second week of December is when I'm going to really start to look for those biggest ones.
Is that because of cold fronts that push through?
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, we start getting our cold fronts in October. November, you see a small trickle of fish show up. But by that first or second week of December, that water temperature is about perfect where you've got some good groups of sheep's head really showing up along the intercoastal and along the beaches, and that first initial good bunch that comes in is usually your larger fish.
Gotcha.
Showing up from where?
Well, according to biologists, they're here year-round, but
So they're like the redfish in where they like disappear and nobody knows where they
go? Yeah, they go into like that weird, who knows, they put on like an invisible cloak and just disappear.
Yeah. So we've spouted theories before on this, and it used to be that the prevailing theory was that the big fish went into deeper water. And then we started talking to guys who are fishing in deeper water, and it turns out that they're saying we never, ever catch sheep's head out here past about 80 or 100 feet. So if they're in deeper water, what are they doing? What are they eating? Where are they going? We never catch them. Nobody who dives deep ever sees them. So now the idea is that they must be just dispersed somewhere here in our inshore waters. And I've talked with a lot of people about that, too. And it's like, well, if they're here, why don't we ever find them? I mean, come on. You'd think one would show up every now and then. And I mean, I see babies sometimes around the rocks, around the piers, mm-hmm. and in the canals, but never anything sizable. So it remains a mystery.
That's very intriguing. That's, wow. Why do we see them only during the winter months, the big, big ones? Just like trout in the summer, where do they go? Speckled trout, but that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah, it's a whole other thing that you have to do a whole other show on. But we do know why they're gathering up in the winter, and that's for spawning purposes.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
And that's why you'll find your largest ones tend to show up in nice little groups, usually kind of early. You know, the first little batch that moves in is usually kind of small, but that second little wave of them is usually much, much larger fish. You know, and because they're getting into those little schools, I mean, you'll almost never see them by themselves. There's usually two dozen. I mean, they're
to 200, yeah. Depending where you're at.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, and they are very much a structure-oriented fish because of their food item. You know, their main food that they really like the most is crab. So they're going to be found around pilings, rock structures, oysters, stuff like that. So those are going to be the areas that you really generally want to seek them out.
Right. And if you look at the teeth that a sheep's head has, it's a very unique set of dentition that you don't see on most other fish, even on other porgies, which sheep's head are in the porgy family. Other porgies may have teeth kind of like a sheep's head, but never quite to the extreme that a sheep's head has.
Exactly.
Where they have these front teeth for clipping things off and these rear teeth for just absolutely crushing almost anything that they want to crush. So crabs are high on the menu. They also eat shrimp. One favorite food that's hard to use for bait is barnacles.
Yes.
They clip barnacles off with those teeth, flip them right into their back of the mouth, and crush them right up. And most people don't realize it, but barnacles are actually a type of crustacean. So they're related to crabs and shrimps. So it's not really a shock that sheep's head go after them.
Right, and to add to that, go ahead, Alex.
Would you say that they do prefer crabs over oysters? Have you asked them?
Yeah, that's the thing is, if you're trying to get into what do they actually prefer, then the only way you'd be able to find that out would be to follow a sheep's head around and, you know, take notes, watch what he's doing, look and see what he's doing. Or you could catch them, see what's in their stomachs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of the stuff like shrimp, for example, being softer shelled, they don't last as long in a fish's stomach as something like a crab does or something really hard shelled like a barnacle.
Right. Have you filleted a big sheep's head and, like, its intestines just full of crunchy, just feels like a
just
ton
crunchy
of gravel.
Bits. What's in here?
Right. And it's all just, like, broken up oyster shells.
Oyster shell, barnacle, sometimes little bits of clam, and if you look through there really close, you'll find little bits of crab shell. But crab shell is not calcium carbonate like the oyster shells and barnacle mm-hmm. shells are, so it dissolves a lot faster.
Exactly.
So it's really hard to tell exactly what those fish are eating.
What kind of crabs would I want to use?
You know, crabs with legs.
Crabs, well, oh, yeah, okay.
And I think we keep going back to crabs, and you were asking what their favorite food is, and I don't think it's necessarily what their favorite food is. It's just that crabs are one of the most sought-after baits for them because it's actually one of the easiest baits to usually obtain for most anglers.
Yeah, I always see people with their little brushes on long sticks and nets trying to get all the crabs out of the trees.
Yeah.
Is it better to use those or find like a pass crab somewhere?
My opinion, Alex, is I've been on like the Placida Pier. I've done it a couple times, like growing up, where people will have shrimp. Like you'll be fishing next to people with shrimp,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't matter if you have fiddler crabs. A couple of times I was using fiddlers and like the little mud crabs you can find underneath like oysters. Those and some other guy was using blue crabs, and it didn't matter what type of crab, as long as you're using a crab, a small one. Those people who are using crabs would outfish people with shrimp. I'm not saying shrimp don't work. People yeah. were catching them with the shrimp, but it seemed like the sheep's head would just like go like to become
much
like
more,
a magnet.
Much more prefer the crab.
100%.
Well, I got a theory on that. And my theory is that that's sheep's head in areas where they're heavily fished, like around piers where a lot of people are fishing.
Right.
Those fish become educated that, you know, shrimp are far more commonly used as bait than crabs are. So if there's a chunk of shrimp hanging out down there, it probably has a hook in it. Whereas if it's a crab, it's less likely to have a hook because there's a lot more crabs around those pilings than there are shrimp naturally. Yes. So it's what they're more naturally feeding on. They'll absolutely go after a shrimp. I hate land-based sheep's head fishing for that reason, because you got to use crabs if you want to catch decent sized ones. So I'd much rather go out on the boat and fish them with shrimp. I very rarely use crabs out there.
Very true, because I know only one place that I can only access by boat. I fish for sheep's head, and they just destroy shrimp.
Yeah.
And on piers, that's a very valid point. On piers, only crabs were like what was going to be work and catch like the big solid ones, but boat based, it was basically on shrimp. So that's a very solid point.
Now, you also touched on the fact that they're in the porgy family. You know, we keep saying sheep's head, and we're not misspeaking. So
it is sheep's head and not sheep head. Sheep head are a different species, one of which is freshwater and found in places like Lake Erie.
Yeah, another find them a lot sheep up there head. North, and they're considered a trash fish. So that's why a lot of people get confused that are visiting from up north. They think that we're fishing for this garbage fish, and the reality is our fish is extremely edible and a very much sought-after table fare.
Yeah. Another one I think is in California, Robert?
Yeah.
Yeah, a type of wrasse, which also has some really weird teeth and is a truly bizarre-looking fish. Once you've seen the two, I don't think anybody's going to mistake them.
Yeah.
Wrasse are really beautiful fish.
So, Josh, as the guest of our show, if you're trying to catch the biggest sheep's head you can possibly catch, what would be your setup be, and where would you be fishing?
Well, obviously, I'm not going to try to fish them where everybody else is fishing them. Mm-hmm. You know, those big sheep's head, in order to become big sheep's head, they can't be stupid. You know, sheep's head are such a valued food fish that most people will keep them as soon as they hit legal size, and some people will keep them well before that. So in order for them to survive to be a large size, you know, they need to stay away from those areas where they're being harvested in large numbers, or at least they're not going to eat baits in those areas. Mm. So I tend to gravitate more towards places where people are less likely to fish for them. Now, see, this question is a little bit challenging to answer, because if you're telling me that you want to catch the biggest sheep's head that you possibly can, mm-hmm. then I'm going to go to a technique that probably is not going to be great for numbers, but is more likely to get me a big sheep's head, and that is fishing along deeper mangrove shorelines.
Really? Deep, during the winter?
Yeah. If you can find them, any place that's holding water. You get those mangrove prop roots in the water that have barnacles and oysters and stuff like that on them. Sheep's head will hang around those just as much as they'll hang out around pilings and piers that have all that kind of incrustation on them, but they're less likely to be targeted there.
Right.
So that's where a lot of those bigger fish are going to be moving to in order to stay away from fishermen. And they're going to be a little bit more off their guard there.
What size main line would you be using?
I'm probably going to use basically one of my redfish setups, which all of them have either 10 or 15-pound braid on them. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm probably going to use a 20 or 30-pound leader, just like I would if I were redfishing. I might even use the same jig head that I would use for redfishing.
Is that like a 10, 20? What size jig head would you use?
Well, it's not delineated exactly by hook size. I would guess that's probably a 2-aught or 3-aught hook.
Gotcha.
On those. It's just a pretty standard, I forget what brand it is, but yeah. It's a 1/4-ounce jig head.
Shrimp or crab?
I'd probably use shrimp.
Yeah.
Because it's easier.
Yeah, easier to find. And easier to get.
Well, and they also bite a little bit differently with crabs. When you have something whole and crunchy like that, the way they pick it up and spit it out and pick it up and spit it out is a little bit more challenging. With shrimp, they tend to just grab it, and once they realize, oh, wait a minute, this is not very crunchy. I mean, most of us have bitten into a shrimp shell. You know you can chew it up. So can they very easily. So they don't need to bite and spit. They tend to hold on to it instead.
Right. And another caveat I was going to add to sheep's head fishing is you've got to use a very strong hook, like a very thick wired hook, because I've had it happen multiple times where when they go to crunch either your shrimp or your crab, they will bend the hook closed. I've had that happen a couple times.
Or clip it off.
Or break the metal, because yeah. They're used to biting on shells. So they can destroy your hook. And you just come up, you get the bite, and you set the hook, nothing's there. You bring it up, and you're like, my hook is mangled.
Right.
That's the only fish species I've ever had that happen with.
Now, on the flip side, I have caught some really nice sheep's head on little tiny hooks
yeah.
when you hook them in the lip. Because
right.
then they can't obviously reach around and crunch it. So,
yeah.
But you got to be lucky for that.
Yeah. we're trying to increase our chances, so we want to use something a little stronger. Or if you want to play on the luck side, I guess you could go light wire like a mosquito hook. But
sure, you could. Absolutely.
What about you, Robert?
Roll them dice.
See, and I'm going to agree with you for the most part on that, but I might even seek out some of the small oyster patches that are scattered throughout the intercoastal, mm-hmm. whether it's in Pine Island Sound or even up in Bull and Turtle Bay. But probably my most favorite way that I'm going to go look for those guys is going to one of the inshore reefs like Danger Reef, Cape Hayes Reef, and I'm going to use a small crab, like possibly a pass crab or a little blue crab, something with a little bit of size to it but not giant, something like in that quarter to silver dollar size. And I know I'm obviously going to catch far fewer fish. I'm going to go through several of them. But I'm going to give that a shot because some of the biggest sheep's head that I have ever personally seen that have been brought into this shop have been guys going off, like you said, off the beaten path a little bit and trying something a little different. Most people that go out to any of the nearshore reefs, whether it's out in the Gulf or in the harbor, are constantly using shrimp. The guys that tend to throw out a little pass crab because there's certain times of the year, especially around that full moon, every now and then we'll get a little crab hatch of usually the pass crabs or the iridescent swimming crabs is the real name for them, correct?
Yep.
And that can happen in those winter months, like around February as well, Robert.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And those sheep's head really get focused on those. And I've seen, my personal biggest that I've seen brought into the store was 10.5 pounds.
Jeez.
I know a couple of locals who call those crabs purple leggers. So
yeah.
If you hear about purple leggers, that's what they are.
Are you leaving the legs on? Are you hooking them just the
using them whole the way they are?
Okay. Yeah.
Claws and all?
No, probably not, because those claws get a little nerve-wracking in the webbing of your skin. Little blue...
Reaching into that bait well.
Blue crabs and the swimming crabs have got some pretty pointy little claws, so they get you in the webbing of your finger. It actually kind of hurts a little bit. You know, versus like a fiddler crab, which is probably one of the most common sheep's head baits because it's very readily available most of the time. That claw does hurt if it gets you in the exact spot, but for the most part, it's more for looks than it is actual for protecting itself and attacking somebody.
Hey, not for nothing, but I never got pinched by a chunk of shrimp.
I've true, gotten stabbed.
But I've been jabbed by more yeah. frozen shrimp than I have live shrimp.
True.
Robert, really?
Are you using a jig head?
No.
Are you using any weight?
I'm going to use a Mutu Light circle hook by owner.
A circle hook for the sheep's head?
It's an offset circle hook, so it's not a true circle hook. And okay. It's actually kind of, the owner Mutu Light is actually almost a modified Kaylee hook.
Right.
It's a little thinner wire, but it is offset. And yeah, I'm going to use a sinker, but depends on the current. Most of the time I'm going to use a split shot with it and just let it sink down naturally because I'm usually fishing some of the areas where it's much, much slower water flow and get a much better feel for that bite because they are bait thieves. I mean, one or two pecks, you're done. You know, that you're lucky if you get that second or third shot.
Now,
Adam,
I feel like if we're going to talk about sheep's head, we kind of have to talk about hooking them because this is where a lot of people are going to have a lot of frustration trying to get those fish
point.
On the hooks. So what's your technique, Barry?
My technique? For the sheep's head is I like to use J-hooks because I was just going to ask Robert, why does he prefer a circle hook for these sheep's head? Mm-hmm. I like to use a J-hook because I don't want them, they're going to like tap, you're going to feel them tap, tap, tap. And when I finally start feeling weight on the line and the taps are gone, but it's like moving off, that's when I stick them. I'm like setting the hook pretty well. I don't do anything gradual and let them kind of run off with it with like a circle hook because I just find I don't hook as many.
And where do your sheep's head usually end up hooked? In the lip, in the cheek?
I mean, it goes through with a jig head. It goes, I mean, in their mouth. Like, it hooks them so well sometimes that you have a hard time backing out the hook.
Okay.
So in their cheeks, wherever it sticks them, it hooks them all different places.
But it's hooking them in the inside of the mouth?
Yes.
In the internal portions?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Robert, how's your technique different?
It actually hooks them in just about all those same places, too, because it's an offset circle hook. But the problem is, or the reason why I switched to that Mutu Light on them is because I actually increased my hookups on sheep's head by probably 20%.
Wow.
Over the J hook.
I think there's some misconceptions with circle hooks and ones that are offset that a lot of people think that you don't need to set an offset circle hook where you do actually want to set it. Is that correct, Robert?
Yeah. Yeah. You can do it both ways, though. You can reel and it'll just start to bury itself, or you can set the hook. And I usually don't set the hook anyway on a J hook or a circle hook. I'm just lifting the rod and reeling at the same time while applying pretty good pressure. And once I feel that that fish is on for that half a second to a couple seconds, then I might do a couple little short, hard wraps of my rod to get it to sink that hook in a little bit better.
So what about you?
I'm never really just reefing up on that fish.
Okay.
I'll say, what about you, Josh? What's your technique?
So I've turned a lot of people who don't know how to catch fish at all into people who are able to catch bottom fish using the lift and reel method. And it doesn't matter if that fish is a sheep's head or a grouper or a snapper. It doesn't really seem to make a whole lot of difference. So what I'm doing is I'm letting my sinker or my jig head, whichever method I've decided to use, because I use both out there, come into contact with bottom. And I'm talking here about the reef fishing, not about going up and catching those big ones around the mangroves, because that's a lot like red fishing.
Yeah.
You know, it basically takes the bait, you reel. When you feel those little tap, tap nibbles, because you're going to feel that, and a lot of that is going to be smaller fish out there. Sometimes it'll be the big sheep's head coming along and tap, tap, nipping, but not usually. What I do is I start lifting the rod as soon as I feel those tap, tap nibbles. If it's a bigger fish, the bigger fish does not want to see his food escaping. So a lot of times what they'll do is they'll grab it for real. And then your tap, tap nibbles will stop, but you'll feel weight on the end of your rod. Mm-hmm. When you feel that weight, your hand needs to be on the reel handle, ready to go. You feel that weight, you start reeling. Yeah. As you start reeling, you start lifting up. By the time you've reeled and lifted up, well, now you're fighting the fish. You're already bringing him up to the surface. It's perfect because there is no jerky movement to pull the bait away from the fish. There is no chance to rip the hook out of that fish's lip. It's all very smooth and very low key. And if you watch somebody doing it, it's almost like, well, are you actually going to try to hook that fish? Or, oh, wait a minute, now he's fighting the fish. How did he do that? So, on the other hand, if you lift it and the tap, tap, taps continue, then just drop it right back down to the bottom because you don't have that big fish yet. You have either something just playing with the bait or that big fish has not really committed to it yet.
I think that's a very good explanation for people who are just getting into fishing, and that's a great way to teach people how to effectively hook fish. That's a great way to do it.
I do it all the time with people. Usually we start out with some kind of training fish like pinfish or sand perch or something like that. And I tell them, you're going to miss a whole bunch of fish at first because you're not going to be able to help yourself from jerking the rod. But once you're able to do this successfully, consistently, then we can take this out here and you'll be able to do it just based on your muscle memory. And they're shocked at what they're able to catch.
So that's not a specific technique for sheep's head.
It is not.
Nope. That can work well for just about everything.
And that is an evolution from when people told me, in order to hook a sheep's head, you have to set the hook before he bites the lure or before he bites the bait, which threw me for all kinds of loops when I was a kid.
Sure.
Because literally, that's
count
what
to
I was
three,
told.
Set the hook.
Yeah.
Count to three, set the hook on one.
Yeah.
that's how I was taught 30 years ago.
This is the advice you're given, and it's like, how do I even work with that? You can't. So, you know,
weird.
You have to watch, you have to learn, you have to find out what fails, and then
improve
find out what
it.
Succeeds.
Right. Yeah. That's great advice to everyone listening. I think it's really good. Well, thank you for joining us, Josh. That was great.
I am happy to have been here today.
It's good stuff. You know, it's just a lot of different things.
If you haven't seen the inside of a sheep's head's mouth, it's really interesting. It's these little miniature molars, human molars, and
looks like it's been in a
boxing match.
Yeah.
Nice. That's a perfect description.
And
if you're used to
if you're used to lipping bass, don't do that.
You don't want to do that.
Stick anything in their mouth.
That'll leave a mark.
Well, that ends up another episode of Big Fish Radio. I hope these techniques, especially what Josh described, that was perfect, on how to catch these big sheep's head, and I hope you guys find this helpful. Once again, it's Captain Barry with Captain Josh, Alex B. Fishin', and Robert. We're signing off, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Bye.